You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey, welcome to HR Bandit. This is your host, Ankita, and I'm so glad you're here to celebrate our second birthday. 2 years ago, this very day, I was fretting over practice run, topics, sound quality, how to place a microphone right, and a gazillion other details. Bandits, if you've been around a while, I want to hear from you. Drop me a tweet. Send me a message on LinkedIn or email me at hrpartnerstory@gmail.com. Let us know what you've enjoyed best so far and what you'd like to see in the year ahead. If you're new here, a big giant hug to you. But without further ado, I'm going to jump into our three topics for the day. First up, Pew's latest research throws light on the growing share of US marriages where both partners earn the same. Yet, in a not-so-surprising twist of events, men continue to spend more time on leisure while their partners spend higher number of hours engaged in housework. For our second topic, Spotify is releasing Disco version 2.0, but the water principles remain. I love the water principles and I love their front-end principles also, but we'll cover that and more. For our last and final topic, kindness. Research shows the economic value of kindness, something we need in the workplace now more than ever. But Bandits, before we jump into our best mix yet, I'm obviously going to introduce you to the best part of the show, which is our guest for the day. I'm so pleased to introduce you to Mark Efron. Mark is the founder and leads the Talent Strategy Group and consults globally to the world's largest and most successful corporations. He co-founded the Talent Management Institute and created and publishes the Talent Q magazine. He co-authored the Harvard Business Review publishing bestseller, One Page Talent Management and 8 Steps to High Performance. His prior corporate experience includes senior talent management roles at Bank of America and Avon Products. He's also started and led the global leading consulting practice at Hewitt Associates. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Glad to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
Not as glad as I am. You are here for our second birthday. So I have to ask you, cake, balloons, Prosecco, what is the best way to celebrate the second birthday of a podcast?
I think all three of those are a great start. And congratulations. As long as it's afternoon there, you're in good shape.
I'm going to get right to it. But I'm not going to dilly-dally too far. I'm going to jump straight into our first topic. We're going to chat about Pew's latest research. But you released a very fascinating video on April Fool's Day. So before we get into the topic and talk about the research, can you tell us more about what the video was and why did you choose that one to film?
Sure. Occasionally on April 1st, we'll put out a video that we think is slightly entertaining, perhaps slightly more, depending on how much you enjoy them. And this one was actually inspired by a topic that that you mentioned earlier today about working women taking on a larger share of the housework than working men and families. And the short version of the story is I've heard people talking about this in our Talent Management Institute class for a long time. Oh, it's not fair. And my thought was, well, what if we did a little something to help husbands understand that they actually needed to contribute because I, as an employer, were getting sick of them taking time away from my high potential women. So we had a little video. You can send out the link to folks that will encourage men in a very nice way to show up when they need to show up or else.
Bandits, I highly recommend that you take a look at this video. I loved it. I would love such a product to emerge in real life. And all links are always posted in the show notes. So go take a look. I'm going to shoot straight to Pew's research, which backs up the video. Now, Pew Research has been looking at this data since 1972. So they have a fair bit of data to go by. And they've discovered that the percentage of heterosexual marriages where the husband is the sole breadwinner has dropped from 85% to 55% in 2022. In 16% of those marriages, women are the sole breadwinner. And in 29%, both spouses earn about the same. Now, this is a big win from the point of view of gender equality. So you can take a minute to celebrate the wins. However, even more interesting is the fact that husbands in egalitarian marriages spend about 3.5 hours more per week on leisure activities than wives. Wives in these marriages spent roughly 2 hours more per week on caregiving than husbands, and about 2.5 hours more on housework. Now, the research obviously goes on to talk about society's opinion on men's contribution to both caregiving and housework. However, in light of this research, and you couple that with the number of women in high-profile jobs resigning, quoting work-life balance and mental health, Mark, my question to you is there something organizations need to do differently?
I think we can look at this issue from a bit of an economic perspective, meaning supply and demand. Let's look at how do we increase demand? In other words, on the company side, what can we do differently? And I think there's some really standard things that most organizations don't do well that if they simply executed well would help out a lot. First is we call it a talent production line. What is your disciplined production process for building a CEO? In too many organizations, it's a haphazard journey. And we know that men are far more willing to raise their hand, volunteer for work, point out the work that they've been doing, whether it's good or not. And so in many companies, when you have an undisciplined production approach, you've got some guy waving his hand around. So you say, oh, yeah, why don't you give it a shot? So first is let's have a more disciplined approach where we understand what are we trying to build. So what is a great CEO all about? We have a really careful process for assessing talent against that. So a good objective process to say, hey, we have both Shruti and Rajan. They can both be CEO. But then the discipline process. Do we know the experiences and the exposure and the education that we want to move them through to kind of get them towards or on the path to be CEO? That takes discipline, but it's not difficult. We consult with companies every day who do that. So a lot of this is if you really want more female CEOs, put in place a disciplined production process around it. But the second point, and then I'll jump a bit into the supply side, we really need to de-bias feedback, meaning the stats or the research is super clear. Women tend to get less clear, less direct, less task-oriented feedback than men do. In other words, someone might tell Mark, oh, you need to learn how to code in that programming language in order to move up. They might tell Ankita, oh, I'll make sure you're building a good team around you. Okay, one is very hard, skills-oriented. One is just keep being the nice person you are and things will be fine. One piece of advice is helpful. One is not particularly helpful. So how do we de-bias feedback so that men and women get the same level of specific, task-oriented, honest feedback? And the challenge is the research says both men and women give women that type of feedback. So it's not just a man problem. It's a problem we all need to get better at. Let me pause there, and then I'll talk about supply, the supply side. Any thoughts on on what companies can do?
I love the two points you mentioned, right? The feedback thing is something we face all the time. And I think the one thing I've been thinking about for a while, and it plays out in both domestic and corporate life, right? There's something called non-promotable tasks, right? So at home, it's the task that doesn't lead to so-called revenue is the caregiving and housekeeping, which has economic value, but we've just discounted it in so many ways. And then similarly, even at work, when we look at DEI initiatives, most of them get piggybacked on like, oh, who wants to do this? And usually, oh, they point to women on their team and say, do you want to take this? Or things like, oh, who's going to organize pizza? Do you want to do it? Now, all of those tasks likely have economic value. We don't measure them. And, you know, if you label them as non-promotable tasks, I would love to see a gender-segregated data on saying, who picks up those tasks often?
And I think that comes down to managers need to be good managers. So if I'm in the manager and I'm in the meeting and I say, hey, will somebody, you know, get refill of coffee, if a woman raises her hand, I can say, actually, Roger, why don't you go get that done? You know, I need to be conscious of, you know, who is putting themselves in that position, trying to be helpful, but not really being helpful.
I love that. And I think, you know, what doesn't get measured doesn't get done. I genuinely think if we find a way to convert those non-promotable tasks, define the economic value, Roger would see the value in doing it. And he'd be like, I'll get that coffee. So I know how, you know, being a good manager has so many things, but I'm like, can we take some of the pressure off the manager and make incentivize people to do it so that I don't have to remember who does what each time, but it is naturally balanced because that is also a lucrative task.
Exactly. I would love to see it be a more natural behavior. Until that point, I'm happy to force that behavior. That's normally my advice to companies as well. Oh, but shouldn't managers just do this? Yes, they should, but they don't. So you need to hold their feet to the fire to make sure they do it until they learn that that's the right thing to do. Good intentions are lovely. They don't tend to get us very far.
I know. I agree. So tell me
the other interesting side of the equation. Yeah, it's the supply side. And this is the one that's always confused me, because women are certainly more than smart enough to be CEO. They're more than capable enough to be CEO. So why aren't there more there? And normally what we hear is what we just talked about. Oh, there's a bunch of stuff in the way at companies. There's some interesting research that Professor Francesca Gino at Harvard did, just came out last year, 2 years ago, looking at women's interest in the CEO role. And she surveyed a bunch of Harvard MBA grads and undergrads. And they found some interesting things. They found that compared to men, women have a higher number of life goals versus business goals. In other words, kind of they have more outside of work things they want to accomplish. They found that they place a lot less importance on power-related goals. In other words, a lot of men really need to be CEO. I need to be CEO. Women are like, yeah, that's an interesting job. I'll consider it. But there's not like this drive behind it. And women associate more negative outcomes with high power positions, meaning they look at the CEO job, they don't say, that's great, I want it. They have a more measured approach to say, yeah, there's some good things, but there's some bad things about it as well, which means that they are, they kind of perceive that power as less desirable, and they don't always take advantage of the opportunities that would move them in that direction. And so I think there's some interesting both supply and demand. On the demand side, we need to do a better job of saying, if you want this job, we're going to get you there. On the supply side, it feels like we need to do a better job creating a realistic preview. So I'm not going to say, oh, because of those findings, women aren't going to be CEOs. In companies, let's create a more realistic preview of that CEO job. What is it really? You might think it's A, B, and C when it's really D, E, and F. So let's make sure that you're either signing up for or not signing up for an accurate description of the job. And then the other two things that we've talked about, then once they have that realistic preview, hopefully more women will say, I'll give it a shot. Then that talent production line needs to take over, and that de-biased feedback needs to take over. But it feels like there's very little overlap in that Venn diagram between women who really think it will be a cool job and our ability to take those women and move them through the paces. We need to move both sides. You can't see, listeners, my hands are pushing the Venn diagram together. We need to push those circles closer together so there's a bigger intersection. So there's a bunch of stuff we need to solve to get the numbers up. I think it's 8% of women CEOs globally. The number's been going up, but it's been going up very, very, very slowly.
I love how you thought about the entire pipeline of talent. And I do see positive changes in certain parts, but I think as a pipeline as a whole has been, again, to use some of your words, it's been good intentions, but I don't see enough mechanisms put in place to actually make that happen. I'm going to follow up your research for the coming years. Let's see how it does, and let's see if organizations actually play a role in moving the needle.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
I'm going to push us to our second topic, which is equally fascinating and probably it is my favorite topic of the day. I'm biased, I'm going to say that. Spotify's in-house solution for HR reporting and analysis. Now, Disco is going through a revamp. A little context for those who probably have not heard of Disco before. This is Spotify's solution. So they were launched in 2020. It made waves because it was something that was extremely focused on the front end, something you may or may not agree with me, but I think is very, very neglected in the world of HR. And I think this is the perfect opportunity, the fact that they're revamping, to revise ourselves with the famous water principles. This was coined by Gary Munro, who is the director of HR Insights for Spotify. Now, my specific love for Disco comes from the fact that I'm constantly very exasperated by HR analytics and our reporting tools. And Disco focuses on two core pillars. So it does focus on the back-end data warehouse, but it puts an equal focus on the front-end app for its people leaders to use. Now, the data warehouse part is built on what Spotify calls the water principles. So very quickly, there are four water principles. The first one says, don't drown, prioritize the right data sets first, and don't take on everything at once. The second one says, don't water the lawn with bottled water. Focus on data quality, but don't worry about everything being 100% accurate. Third, clean your water at the source. Basically, fix issues in the source systems and don't build workarounds. And lastly, packaging matters. Never underestimate the importance of how you package the outputs of your data processes, both in terms of accessibility and presentation. Now, Mark, every now and then I go on a long monologue on the show. I'm almost tempted to share the front-end principles, but I'm going to step back and stop here. Do you have a favorite water principle? Why is it a favorite, or is there one missing that you would want to add?
Well, if I could be so bold as to suggest two new water principles, which I'm sure Gary has already thought of, but would probably be first on my list. The first is understand if you actually need or want water. Because too often in HR, we find a cool new tool and we say, oh, that's great. How do we use that? As opposed to saying, is there a problem that we need to solve? And I think especially when we look at HR insights or data analytics, what I see is a lot of people generating data in search of a problem to solve. It's like, look, we've got this level of turnover in this place. And it's like, look at the chart. It's like, yes, pretty colors. But no one's really thought about what are we going to do with this? Is it actually solving a business problem? So first, understand if you need or want that water. Is it actually going to help you to solve a problem? Do you already have the answers to that problem? You simply looked around. Is this additional water that isn't going to provide any benefit? Second would be find this. If you do need water, find the simplest and fastest and easiest way to get to the water. Because this, I wrote my book, One Page Talent Management, almost 13 years ago now. And that was really all about, let's just make HR far easier than we do. Let's follow the science, but let's apply that science in a really simple way. We'll probably strip away a lot of the bells and whistles that we like to add to things. So if you need answers to data questions, then what's the easiest possible way to get that? It might not be we create a massive database and we spend $5 million on software and spit some stuff out. You might be able to do some cool stuff on Excel to get to an answer quickly that helps your leaders to make a smart decision and in the background do some other cool stuff. But don't think the best solution is always the biggest one.
I love that. So do you need bottled water or can you just fill the tap from home?
Exactly.
And what's the fastest way to get to this water? You know how when you were talking about just us getting excited about these new tools and things that we hear about, I was thinking about the tech fads over the last 3 to 4 years, right? So in 2020, 21, it was all about crypto, right? You look at any quarterly business reports, it's like crypto, 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 crypto. And then HR was like, oh, do we start, putting crypto in payroll? What's the cool thing you can do with crypto? Last year, it was all metaverse. Like, Jesus, Facebook changed its name to Meta. It was all over the news. And then HR was like, oh, how do we adopt metaverse? How do we do this, right? And then this year, if you look at the incoming quarterly business reports for the first quarter or so, the number of times AI has been mentioned and generative AI, that's the fad. And everyone's like, how do we use ChatGPT in HR? And then strangely, data analytics has been this trend and fad for like 3, 4, 5, 10 years now. And we still get excited when something like Disco comes along that has great front end access to managers. And I'm like, where did we go wrong? Like, why have we not got our own water principles right?
I think there's a lot of FOMO in HR. I there's a lot of fear of missing out. And I think there's a little insecurity there. Oh, the business was talking about crypto. We should figure out what that is. Or that sounds, here's the typical thing. Oh, that sounds a lot more exciting than a disciplined production process for CEOs. Let's go do something more exciting. I always tell my clients, boring is beautiful. Boring is incredibly beautiful. The regular disciplined execution of a high value process is super boring and super valuable. So I think half the challenge is just helping people to understand you don't need to do something new if the stuff that you're doing or if the old stuff would work really, really well. Let's execute what we know works first before we say, well, is there something else we can do? It also goes to, we need to be a lot deeper in the science of human performance in our field, because it's easy to jump from fad to fad when you have no grounding in science about what really works. Then you're continually looking for answers as opposed to looking at all the answers that already exist.
I love that. You know, every episode or so, there's this phrase that gets stuck in my head and won't go away. I have a feeling that boring is beautiful is the phrase for this one. But we've still a topic away from rolling out of here. So I'm going to move us to kindness. And I'm sure there's lots to take away, lots of phrases I'll get here too. But for our last topic, now this is a trend that I love and I am ready to hop on board. And it is kindness. Who would have guessed, right? It was empathy, it was being understanding all through the pandemic. And then suddenly the macroeconomic environment changed, the great resignation dissolved, and empathy and kindness seems to have drastically dropped. Suddenly our leaders are going back on their whole saying of, we trust you to be like, okay, we're either freezing hiring or we're pulling you all back into the office because we don't trust you to work from home, or, you know, yada, yada. Now, I recently rewatched a TED Talk, and this is from a year ago. It is where James Rhee shares his experience from his Ashley Stewart days. A few lines really stood out for me. So I'm going to quote some of the lines he has in his talk. So he says, non-revenue generating investments in people are generally not measured, let alone rewarded. But goodwill is an asset that has place on the balance sheet, but we don't leverage it. Now, in his time as CEO, payroll instead of an expense was accounted as an investment. They measured working capital as a unit of trust. And this is the part I love the most. He says, human resources, like how is it even a cost center? Because it's essentially what drives our business. And I would highly recommend watching that talk. And then very soon after, I read HBR's 2021 article on Don't Underestimate the Power of Kindness at Work. Now, for all the talk about kindness, it really looks like we're missing a trick here. Mark, in your opinion, what is the role or economic value of kindness in business?
Well, I'm concerned, Nikita, you might think my answer is not particularly kind, but I would rather be right than kind. So let's dig in. I think to the topic we were just talking about, empathy/kindness feels like it's in a bit of the fad/FOMO type of category. So to your point, when we went into lockdown, every headline in the business and HR media was about empathy, 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 as if leaders had never been empathetic before, and we needed to start from scratch teaching these stupid leaders how to be empathetic. And in reality, yes, was there probably a bit more empathy needed, you know, during the heart of COVID? Absolutely. But it wasn't that somehow it was missing before and it's essential now. It was always important. Turn the dial up a bit. And I still look at it at kind of empathy stroke kindness in that way, always important. But I would suggest a couple things. One, it's a bit binary in that once you hit I'm drawing a little graph. Once the curve levels off on the graph, once I'm kind enough, it's probably fine. There's probably not a linear relationship between one additional unit of kindness and one additional unit of engagement. There's probably a level where, you know, enough is enough. So while kindness is a good, it's not a good that is going to contribute if you're brilliant at it. Just don't be a jerk and you're probably fine. But the challenge I see in most companies isn't not enough kindness. It is surprisingly too much kindness. I wrote an article a few years ago called Don't Have a Nice Culture. Because wherever I go around the world, I hear something that sounds like this. If I'm in the United States in the U.S. state of Minnesota, they have an expression called Minnesota nice. And they'll explain, oh, we're from Minnesota. We don't want to hurt people's feelings. We want to be, you know, really kind. Or then I'll go to Latin America and they'll say, well, you know, in Latin America, we treat each other like family. We're very nice to each other. Or I'll go to India. They'll say, well, there's some power distance here. So you can't always say we're nice as human beings. It's a universal human quality. The challenge is when nice translates to lack of honesty. Because that's the larger problem I see is if you're nice, if I care about Ankita, I should be nice to you by being honest with you about your performance and potential in our company. I should want you to succeed enough that I should be able to say, hey, in that last meeting, that report kind of landed this way. You might want to work on this in the future instead of saying, it's fine. I don't want to be mean to her by giving her feedback. In most companies, we aren't kind enough to be transparent with people to say, I want you to be an even higher performer. I want you to have an even better career. That can happen if you do A, B, and C. So in too many companies, kindness is masquerading as cowardness. And people say, oh, I'm kind. It's like lying to people about their performance or their behaviors or their future is not very kind. Kind would be to say in a very generous, helpful, positive spirited way, here's how you can be even better.
It's very interesting.
A monologue. I'm sorry.
No, that we love monologues here. So everyone's allowed to go on a monologue a couple of times. But it's really interesting you say that because before now, I hadn't heard as many people be confident or courageous enough to talk out, to say things like, oh, empathy is like, in the workplace is not, like, it's natural, it's always been there. Similarly to what you said about kindness, they said this is not what's required, this is something else. And there are, so I definitely think we needed to be more empathetic and it needed to be in the headlines in 2020, 21, and even now. Because I have had encounters with innumerable leaders where we say, okay, there's a war happening, not just in Ukraine and Russia, but also in Sudan and like a million other places. You have employees from all of these countries, acknowledge it, right? And they're just like, no, you know, like when you start acknowledging one thing, where does it end? Like, I'm not going to acknowledge any of these events. It's just, it's uncomfortable. People are coming to work. Everything's getting down. And on one-to-one basis, if someone wants time off, they'll do it. But I'm not comfortable acknowledging world events or things related to policies. Like, I'm not going to come out and share my opinion on Roe versus Wade, for example, in front of my team. Now, I think a decade ago, that would have been all right. But right now, we want our leaders to share their opinion. Like you said, be honest and be forthcoming in what you think about it, but also not judge others, because a lot of leaders also said, I have both Ukrainians and Russians on my team. Like, I can't necessarily go out and say one versus the other because I don't know what they're thinking. But I think that's the kind of kindness and empathy that we need more in the workplace that I haven't seen enough of personally. I think people are still so hesitant about saying something that might be politically incorrect and then get into trouble with HR for it and a whole variety of things. And I'm curious, just do you think that kind of behavior is needed in the organization? Because I know both parties exist. There's people who've come out and said, no, we won't talk about all of this at work.
Yeah, I think there's a middle ground, which is individual, not corporate. Meaning, if you're my boss and you know that I've likely been affected by some recent event, whatever that event is, then kindness would be you saying to me, hey, Mark, I know all the headlines are about X. I'm not sure how you feel about it. Just want to let you know, kind of I'm thinking about you. And if you need anything from me, let me know. That's individual kindness. That's different than me sending a note to my 100 team members saying, this is in the headlines, our position on this is blah, blah, blah. Because that's where companies tend to get into trouble is any statement you make, you're going to offend somebody. So we just know that. And people take offense very easily these days. So any statement you make from either side, someone's going to be offended. The question is, what's the value of that public statement versus a private one? I would much rather, and again, if it's an issue that your company needs to take a stand on for corporate reasons, great, do that. But most of the time, I think I'd rather rely on individual managers to be good managers, show the empathy and kindness that you mentioned, but do it on a much more personalized letter, a much more personalized way. Because what would you respond better to, a memo from corporate or your manager having a conversation with you?
And it's very interesting to ask that because I have been debating it. Again, we don't have to align on our views here, but I would love my manager to come out and say, I'm thinking of you and all of that. But I would also look to say, what's my organization leader thinking about this? And what is my organization doing in this place? Like, and I'm going to come back to the Roe versus Wade, for example. Organizations did provide a whole voice of support. They shared their stance on it. Now, I'm not saying they do that about every single thing, but I would categorize it as kindness. They know that a large variety, large population of their employees are impacted. And on the same side, you also had a variety of organizations who came out and said nothing. They were just like, this is politics. It does not impact us. This is our business. We're going to focus on our core business. Now, there's no right or wrong. But personally, if I was looking to say which organization would I be happier working for, it would be someone mm-hmm. that I knew what stance they were taking.
And I think that there's, to your point, there's no right or wrong. And a lot of it comes down to what you just mentioned. What's the culture that you're trying to build? You might build a culture where you say, look, we are a socially aware company. We're going to be visible and communicative about our points of view. Cool. Yeah. You might say, guess what? We're here to do X. That's the job. We're going to get X done. If you've got interest, then that's on your own time. Cool. Be public about who you are so that if I'm looking for a company, I can sign up for the one that best aligns with my values. So I'm a big fan of transparency, going back to our kindness thought. I'd much rather have somebody be open with me, and that goes all the way to corporations being open about here's how we manage, here's how we communicate, or even here's our point of view on issues that you might find to be important.
I love bringing us to a full circle. And I love it when people have these long discussions on topics. But I'm going to get us out of here. The one thing that the Harvard Business article talks about is the power of compliments. Now, I don't care about kindness and everything else. I'm always happy getting a compliment. But it says it's something small that benefits the giver more than the receiver and creates an environment of kindness. So, Mark, in the spirit of kindness, I have to say you've been one of our most open and honest guests on the show. I love how you've made my job easy by directing the conversation. And hopefully our bandits listening today can walk out of here, turn to the person next to them, give them a little compliment, and see if that helps change the mood in the room.
Well, I think you have done a brilliant job on the podcast and a brilliant job preparing for all of your listeners. You don't know, I got a 3-page note helping me to think through this. Normally, I get a 2-bullet questions from other podcasters. So great job. And the quality of your podcast is reflected through your preparation.
Thank you, Mark. It was a pleasure to have you here. Before we leave, I threw a challenge out to the bandits. I asked them to turn around and give someone a compliment. Is there something you would like our listeners to do today?
If you are a manager, I'm not sure how many of your listeners are managers. If you're a manager today, tell your highest potential people that they are your highest potential people and you want them to go far and fast. Tell the people who are a bit, here's what I would love to see you do more of and I'll help you get there. So take one step forward to make everybody on your team a higher performer.
I love that. I definitely think people don't do that enough because, well, Ankita got told she's a high performer. Mark did not. Mark, why did you not get told that? But I love it. Any closing words, Mark, before I get us out of here?
Stick to the science in the field that we are in. The science gives us a lot of guides and keep things unbelievably practical. Managers want to do a lot of great things in talent. Let's not overcomplicate it for them.
I love that. And with that, I'm going to get us out of here. On behalf of Mark, NHRDN, and Ankita, we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.